He glanced down. 100 feet or so below him, people were milling around, some of them beginning to look up expectantly, clearing a space for him, even temporarily calling off the wonderful and completely fatuous hunt for Wockets. He would hate to disappoint them, but about 2 feet below him, he hadn't realised before, was Colin. Colin had obviously been happily dancing attendance and waiting for him to decide what he wanted to do. "Colin!" Ford bawled. Colin didn't respond. Ford went cold. Then he suddenly realised that he hadn't told Colin his name was Colin. "Come up here!" Ford bawled. Colin bobbed up beside him. Colin was enjoying the ride down immensely and hoped that Ford was too. Colin's world went unexpectedly dark as Ford's towel suddenly enveloped him. Colin immediately felt himself get much, much heavier. He was thrilled and delighted by the challenge that Ford had presented him with, just not sure if he could handle it, that was all. The towel was slung over Colin. Ford was hanging from the towel, gripping to its seams. Other hitchhikers had seen fit to modify their towels in exotic ways, weaving all kinds of esoteric tools and utilities and even computer equipment into their fabric. Ford was a purist. He liked to keep things simple. He carried a regular towel from a regular domestic soft furnishing shop. It even had a kind of blue and pink floral pattern, despite his repeated attempts to bleach and stonewash it. It had a couple of pieces of wire threaded into it, a bit of flexible writing stick, and also some nutrients soaked into one of the corners of the fabric so he could suck it in an emergency. But otherwise, it was a simple towel you could dry your face on. The only actual modification he had been persuaded by a friend to make to it was to reinforce the seams. Ford gripped the seams like a maniac. They were still descending, but the rate had slowed. "Up, Colin!" he shouted. Nothing. "Your name," shouted Ford, "is Colin. So when I shout, 'Up, Colin,' I want you, Colin, to go up, okay? Up, Colin!" Nothing. Or rather, a sort of muffled groaning sound from Colin. Ford was very anxious. They were descending very slowly now, but Ford was very anxious about the sort of people he could see assembling on the ground beneath him. Friendly, local wocket-hunting types were dispersing, and thick, heavy, bull-necked, slug-like creatures with rocket launchers were, it seemed, sliding out of what was usually called thin air. Thin air, as all experienced galactic travellers well know, is, in fact, extremely thick with multidimensional complexities. "Up!" bellowed Ford again. "Up, Colin! Go up!" Colin was straining and groaning. They were now more or less stationary in the air. Ford felt as if his fingers were breaking. "Up!" They stayed put. "Up! Up! Up!" A slug was preparing to launch a rocket at him. Ford couldn't believe it. He was hanging from a towel in midair, and a slug was preparing to fire rockets at him. He was running out of anything he could think of doing and was beginning to get seriously alarmed. This was the sort of predicament that he usually relied on having the guide available for to give advice, however infuriating or glib, but this was not a moment for reaching into his pocket. And the guide seemed to be no longer a friend and ally, but was now itself a source of danger. These were the guide offices he was hanging outside for Zark's sake, in danger of his life from the people who now appeared to own the thing. What had become of all the dreams he vaguely remembered having on the Bwaneli Atoll? They should have let it all be. They should have stayed there, stayed on the beach, loved good women, lived on fish. He should have known it was all wrong the moment they started hanging grand pianos over the sea monster pool in the atrium. He began to feel thoroughly wasted and miserable. His fingers were on fire with clenched pain, and his ankle was still hurting. "Oh, thank you, ankle," he thought to himself bitterly. "Thank you for bringing up your problems at this time. I expect you'd like a nice warm foot bath to make you feel better, wouldn't you? Or at least you'd like me to..." He had an idea. The armoured slug had hoisted the rocket launcher up onto its shoulder. The rocket was presumably designed to hit anything in its path that moved. Ford tried not to sweat because he could feel his grip on the seams of his towel slipping. With the toe of his good foot, he nudged and prized at the heel of the shoe on his hurting foot. damn you!" Ford muttered hopelessly to Colin, who was cheerily straining away but unable to rise. Ford worked away at the heel of his shoe. He was trying to judge the timing, but there was no point. Just go for it. He only had one shot, and that was it. He had now eased the back of his shoe down off his heel. His twisted ankle felt a little better. Well, that was good, wasn't it? With his other foot, he kicked at the heel of the shoe. It slipped off his foot and fell through the air. About half a second later, a rocket erupted from the muzzle of its launcher, encountered the shoe falling through its path, went straight for it, hit it, and exploded with a great sense of satisfaction and achievement. This happened about 15 feet from the ground. The main force of the explosion was directed downwards, where, a second earlier, there had been a squad of Infinidim Enterprises executives with a rocket launcher standing on an elegant terraced plaza paved with large slabs of lustrous stone cut from the ancient alabastrum quarries of Zentalquabula. There was now, instead, a bit of a pit with nasty bits in it. A great whump of hot air welled up from the explosion, throwing Ford and Colin violently up into the sky. Ford fought desperately and blindly to hold on and failed. He turned helplessly upwards through the sky, reached the peak of a parabola, paused, and then started to fall again. He fell and fell and fell, and suddenly winded himself badly on Colin, who was still rising. He clasped himself desperately onto the small, spherical robot